Coming off that conversation with Scott Klusendorf, you know what you heard in that hour is what we are trying to do on a regular basis here on Issues Etc. Defend life from beginning to end. I agree with Scott. The church needs to do more by way of educating its people to make good left-hand kingdom arguments against things like embryonic stem cell research. That's why we make it part of our duty here on the air to defend life from beginning to end with the unbelievably great guests like Scott Klusendorf. Help us defend life from beginning to end with a year-end tax-deductible gift to the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. You can give by credit card. Our resource line number is 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. You can donate online at our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Just write us at Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. It's Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. The last 25 minutes, we're going to be doing a little review of Hollywood on the Holidays, a movie review for the holidays. Brian Godawa is our guest. He's a regular. He's a screenwriter in Southern California and author of the book Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. Brian, welcome back.
Hey, Todd.
The big movie that's coming out today, of course, is King Kong. The paper says it's 3 hours, 7 minutes long. What do you think about a 3-hour, 7-minute movie remake at that?
Well, you know, in general, it's very offensive to me because it's that they feel that they have the right to take that many hours would require that something be an epic on the level of Narnia, Lord of the Rings, or Braveheart. Only in those level, on that level, do I really like or accept three-hour movies. It's hard for me to believe that King Kong could be made into a three-hour, but you know what? I'm a fan of, it might be an epic. It might be a big epic, and it might have some great, some great scenes with Kong in it and stuff. So I also love CGI and stuff like that. So I'll just have to wait and see. I'm going to see it today.
You know, I love what they're able to do now with the computer graphics now. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
At the same time, I'm a little sad because I think we're turning the page in movie making, where it's either going to be this, where it's just like wowsy zowsy, they can do anything now, mm-hmm. or it's just going to be, three weddings and a funeral with no special effects at all or something like that.
Yeah, the independents and then the huge big blockbusters because, studios seem to keep being driven towards those because they think that's where they're going to make all their big money, you know, and then they miss all these great movies like Crash and, that are small that end up being good. Why? Because they're great stories and that's what people really want. So, you know, even if you look at these, big hits like Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe and others, it's not just because they're special effects, it's because they're very good stories. And when you have movies that are just effects, like Aeon Flux, and there's not a good story, they do terrible, like Aeon Flux did. So, you got to have a great story.
Okay, what movies are coming out this Christmas that you're looking forward to seeing?
Well, probably mostly is Kong. Like I said, I'm going to see that today. But I'm interested in Memoirs of a Geisha because it's a very interesting cross-cultural look at the geisha culture in Japanese and in the Japan world of Japan. And I'm curious about the Da Vinci Code. I don't want to see it, and I certainly wouldn't want to support people to go see it unless you are a culture watchdog or you're involved in the sense of you have to interact with people about it. Because I wouldn't want to, get a lot of people supporting it by giving the money to it, but I'm curious to see how Antichrist it's going to be and how the Christian world is going to react to it. Are we going to become, hysterical and help them make more money by driving people to see what's the controversy about? Or, better yet, are we just going to just ignore it if it's a bad movie and people won't go and see it anyway? Problem is if it's a good movie, then we have to deal with it and we have to face up to it, but we can't become screeching, conspiracy theorists about this kind of stuff because evil comes and evil goes and we just, have to deal with it. I'm also interested in The New World, which is the Terrence Malick's movie about Pocahontas, basically. And I'm curious to see if he excises the Christianity out of it because, as Pocahontas became a Christian And, of course, the politically correct agenda is to make it look like, you know, Christianity is the bad guy and it screws up the world that it goes into. And so we'll see if Christianity becomes a fault or a sin or a good thing in the movie The New World, or if it's just totally ignored, which is what I'm disgusted with, how often movies do that. You know, it's sort of like if you don't believe in God, if you don't want the God story, then don't tell our stories, don't take them away from us and retell them like Walk the Line. Don't retell them without God and you know, rape them with your humanism. Tell your own stories, you know, leave ours alone. And but of course that's the nature of cultural imperialism, is you do go and take the other people's stories and you retell them and you excise what you don't believe and recraft it to be your own story. And that's what's going on with a lot of movies. And so I was really grateful to see that Narnia, that has not occurred with Narnia. Thank God people kept it true to the vision, thanks to Douglas Gresham. But let's see, other movies I'm looking forward to. Nothing other than that that's really big. Superman Returns, I'm kind of interested in that one.
I'm going to write down something about Superman Returns because there's a question sticking in the back of my mind about that one. First, let's talk about The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. If I were going to ask you to give a thumbs up or maybe a star rating, 1 to 5, where does it fall for you, Brian?
Oh, yeah, 5. In fact, I thought the movie was better than the book. I've never been impressed with the book. I had a hard time reading it years ago. I stopped. It was boring. But then when the movie was coming out, I slogged through the book, and, you know, it was pretty good, but movie was much better. I think that the imagery of his simple mythology brings it to life much better than the book did. So that's an unusual situation. Very rarely are movies as good as the books. I don't think the movies Lord of the Rings was as good as the books, but in this case, I think it is. You know, it did. They kept the Christianity in it, and of course, it would be very hard to cut it out. But I'm telling you, I had heard that the original company that had the rights to Narnia, before the guy who now currently has it got them, they were going to place it in modern day Los Angeles after an earthquake, and God only knows what they would have done to Narnia and changed the whole world around it. They probably would have taken out the Christianity. So I'm just thankful that they remain true to the vision, and it's a very wonderful kid's story as well.
Was there anything in the film that that you thought didn't work by way of the things they had to do to make a book into a film?
Well, you know, sometimes some plot things that occur in Lewis, they're just sort of arbitrary and, you know, convenient, and that doesn't work as well in movies. You really, everything has to be really have a reason for happening. And excuse me, one example of that might be the little fawn when he catches when he gets Lucy, and then we realize, she wakes up and he confesses he's crying, and he confesses he's going to trap her and bring her to the queen and stuff. And it just sort of seemed like, well, why did this guy get a change of heart? Well, where does that come from? You know, it just sort of, we don't really see where it comes from, and things like that tend to have reasons in movies, but you can get away with them in books, you know.
All right. The other movie that you just mentioned was Walk the Line. I thought had the potential to be a genuinely great movie.
Yeah.
If they did it right.
Yes.
I take it you weren't that happy with this treatment of Johnny Cash's life.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was extremely well done. They're both going to be deservedly nominated for Oscars, I believe. I think I believe either of them can win. Either of them can win. One of them is going to win an Oscar, definitely, at least one of them. So, yeah, it was well done. I totally agree with you. Everything about it was right there and great, except they took the Christianity out. And I know that the Christianity comes in a little bit later in his life in terms of becoming more radical, but I still think the spiritual side of him certainly was a part of his struggle throughout all those troubles and issues. And especially it was more a part of June's life, that they pretty much just relegated it to her taking him to church at the end when he resolved to be a better boy. And then, of course, in the very beginning, he's singing gospel songs, and Christianity is made out to be negative and disingenuous because it says, you know, you don't really believe. It's not, the guy, the producer says, it's not about believing in God, it's about believing in you. That's the music that's going to work. So then Cash throws away the gospel music and decides to sing his songs that kind of come out of himself. And, you know, that's not entirely false, but this, the picture that they're painting is that Christianity isn't really real and it's not relevant to the real world, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that was sort of a sad sort of thing, you know, and I also did feel that it was a well-done, greatly crafted story, but again, it was a rape and a taking away of a Christian story. And I'm just like, tell your own stories, man. Stop telling ours and cutting Christ out of it, you know?
We're talking with Brian Gadawa, our holiday movie review. He's a screenwriter in Southern California and author of the book Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. You can read his movie blog at Gadawa.com. It's G-O-D-A-W-A.com, Gadawa.com. One other thing on that, you mentioned June Carter. June Carter came from perhaps the most famous family gospel singing group ever.
Yeah,
and her, she and Johnny Cash coming together was a very mixed story, of course.
Yeah,
and taking the element of Christianity out of their romance, their becoming eventually, you know, getting married, mm-hmm. seems to me not just taking out an important element. It seems to me be rewriting this man's history.
Oh yeah, I mean, I wrote on my blog. I said, okay, how would these people like it if I wrote a story about the atheist scientist Carl Sagan, and I had nothing about science in the whole movie, and it was just about God? You know, it's like they would be pretty ticked off, and rightfully so, right? What if I made a story about the environmentalist who started Greenpeace, and there was nothing about his love for the environment in the entire biography, except for maybe a vague reference here and there? Well, of course, they would be rightly ticked off. But, of course, you know, you can do this to Christian stories all the time. You can rape them and take that out, and that's okay. You know, it's just sort of like Christianity, again, is oftentimes the publicly acceptable whipping boy, the publicly acceptable bigotry is against Christianity, and that sort of angers me. But on the other hand, you know, I mean, I don't want to be entirely negative. You know, we've got movies like *Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe* getting made, and you know, even good stories like *Pride and Prejudice*. You know, so.
Before we get to *Pride and Prejudice*, let's talk about *Charlie and the Chocolate Factory*. What was your take on this kids' film?
Well, you know, I just saw it on DVD because I didn't see it at the theaters. And you know, Tim Burton has a really interesting-looking visual, but he's not a very good storyteller. He didn't write this, but nonetheless, there's a lot of problems with it, but there's some good points. You know, I think it maintains the original vision of the story, that is, to sort of show the different kinds of selfish children there are in the world that are real, you know, whether it's the fat, over-consuming child, the video-holic child, the overly competitive child that, you know, and all these people draw their ideas from their parents, you know, as well as the selfish, narcissistic child, you know, who gets everything they want from their rich daddy, you know, and it pretty much mocks all those in favor of, you know, a very family-oriented. You know, there's a point in the story where the family is elevated over the individual and creativity, you know, which I found interesting because Hollywood is loaded with individuals who have sacrificed their family for their creativity, and yet this, and probably making that very movie was loaded with people like that, and yet the theme was that, you know, art and creativity is not more important than family, and, you know, pleasure and fun is not the most important thing in life.
This was consciously on the part of the director.
Well, the writer. You know.
But neither of them, I think, in interviews I heard with them, wanted anything to do with the original 1970s film of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. In fact, I think one of them didn't even read the book.
I believe. Oh, really? I thought that they wanted to go back to the original vision of the book rather
yes.
than the story.
But they wanted to avoid the film from the 70s.
Yeah.
And yet, what do you think of Johnny Depp playing this? I couldn't help but think of Michael Jackson during this film the whole
that's
time.
Good. You're right, man. I didn't even think of that. That's so true.
I thought he's playing Michael Jackson.
Which, of course, is the reason why I hated him. And that's a problem, too, because, you know, at least in the original movie, I think that Willy Wonka had a likableness to him with Gene Wilder, that even though he was offbeat and wasn't all that good of a person and needed redemption himself, But in this movie, I hated Johnny Depp, had no grace or redeeming qualities at all, and throughout the story. So that was a problem to me.
Okay, I got to ask you one more question on that film, because I watched this with my daughter, and it was just kind of a mind-bending experience. There's a character that appears both in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, an actor, and was featured in the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. He plays the Oompa Loompas in The Thousands in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and he plays the White Witch's dwarf.
Are you sure?
Yes, same guy. Played these two characters. What did you think of the music in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? These pieces of kind of Bollywood big musical numbers that they ended up doing there.
Well, you know, it's really it was a postmodern variety of different music styles, from Beatles to heavy metal to what have you, and they were all stories that were very songs that were very moral, mocking the selfishness of each child. I kind of liked it myself. I enjoyed it. I actually don't like musicals. I don't usually care for musicals, except for Chicago. But this was one where the music didn't bother me that much, except for the fact that I couldn't understand all the words. I'm getting old.
Oh, sure. You mentioned Pride and Prejudice. How do you think it did on film for, I don't know, this is the umpteenth time?
Yeah, I loved it. I'm going to buy it. I am a fan of the five-hour BBC version with Colin Firth, but for a two-hour version, if you want something more watchable rather than a whole afternoon, I love Pride and Prejudice. They keep true to the language. They don't keep true to the culture that much. They violate a lot of Victorian taboos, like a guy bursting into the girl's bedroom. She's sick and in bed, but nonetheless, he bursts into the bedroom to help her and stuff, and they would never do that. So there's a few elements like that, but, I think that Keira Knightley and the guy who played Darcy are just great actors, and they really capture the heart of those characters and the tension, the sexual tension between them, as well as, the honor and the nobility and all that. So I enjoyed it. And the great thing about British movies is I want to watch them over and over again because the language is so enjoyable to listen to. The wit that's subtext beneath the words is so wonderful. It really gives a good name to language, to words. And movies are normally more images, more about, what do you see, and less words. But this proves that you can have really great words in a movie, and it's still interesting.
I've not been really happy with the movies that Nicolas Cage has been making lately. I didn't think much of National Treasure. I don't know why. It just seemed contrived to me. But
yeah,
his movie that came out was kind of a sleeper, Weatherman. What did you make of it?
The Weatherman is one of those movies that it's a dramedy about a guy who's literally a weatherman, and he's getting his big break into possibly going to New York and be on a big cable network or whatever, something like that. And, it's all about, will he give up his family? He's divorced with his wife, but he's got two kids, and will he walk away from his family, so to speak, or not? And what's more important and all that. And it's one of those movies where it's a mixture of a lot of good and bad. There's a lot of bad extreme language in it, and a lot of sort of crass aspects of life, but it's all very genuine and authentic, and I can't, and so I saw it as like the Book of Ecclesiastes. It's without God. It raises the issues of the meaninglessness of life and the absurdity of how we treat one another and how we live life, and unfortunately the movie does not provide any meaning that can be found. It sort of accepts life as chaos, and in that it's not good. But I think that raising the questions about death, life, and the meaning of life are always welcome, because they cause me to think about it, and I think they cause others to as well. And so it's a very sort of a mixed movie of very interesting, odd, crass humor, but very authentic and biblical in some ways.
Well, when I heard that there was a film coming out that was written by Steve Martin, I think Steve Martin is a genius.
Yes.
And this movie, Shop Girl, seemed to have a nice kind of harmless premise to it. Tell us the story, and what did you think of the film?
Well, Shop Girl is about Claire Danes is this young girl who just moves to L.A. She's an artist to try to make her life, not in the Hollywood industry, but just as an artist, visual artist. And So she meets two guys at the same time. One is a young man played by Jason Schwartzman, who's her own age, and then one's an older man played by Steve Martin, who's obviously as old as her father, or maybe even her grandfather by now, I don't know. Anyway, they both hit on her at the same time. She starts dating him, and the whole issue is you know, does this woman want to take this romantic man who in a way, Steve Martin represents, you know, the success, the security and safety and class, but he doesn't love her. He's only using her for his own companionship. Or the Jason Schwartzman kid, who is sort of a selfish young kid like him. He's way immature, but he loves her. He genuinely cares about her. And over the course of the story, Jason grows up and becomes a little bit more aware and concerned of her needs and focusing on her. So the question is, which one's she going to pick? You know, the immature man or the mature man? But with maturity comes not a lack of love. And so it's a really good struggle, existential struggle of love. It is ultimately an existentialist movie, and I almost think, knowing Steve Martin, I think it might even be a parable about God, meaning that God is distant, and you know, they're in the like the rich man, he's the distant, mature, but unable to really connect with our emotional needs versus the human right before us. I'm not positive about that, but I suspect that might be part of his parable there, but it's a very powerful existential romantic comedy.
Okay, you've mentioned several times you're going to see Kong today, Brian. Yes. With only a minute, less than a minute, perhaps. What does it have to do to merit 3 hours and 7 minutes of you staying in the theater?
It's got to merit awesome special effects with dinosaurs and big beasts and stuff like that. But also, at the end of the day, it's got to have a great story. Not about the Kong story, but about what's going on in the people's story. You know, the girl that he picks up, the filmmaker who brings her there, and all that stuff. That story has to be a great universal sort of story. And I think it might be, because it's about some young nobody girl who gets picked up and become possibility of becoming a famous actress, I believe. And so that touches the fantasy in all of us. So I think that it might have potential for doing that. And you know, I respect Peter Jackson, so I'm willing to give him that shot. I do not respect people like Quentin Tarantino who make three-hour movies, because they do not deserve it. But I'll give Peter Jackson a shot.
Brian Goodow is a screenwriter in Southern California, author of the book Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. His blog, you can find his movie reviews there at Goodow.com, GODAWA.com, Goodow.com. Brian, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, in January, is holding an annual event there that is, you just have to go and experience it to see what this is like. The content of this symposia they're holding January the 17th through the 21st on their campus. Justification in the Scriptures is the first part, and the second part is the person and work of the Holy Spirit. Two amazing, amazing subjects. For more information about this symposia, January the 17th through the 21st, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call them 260-452-2247. Tomorrow on the program, Oz Guinness will talk about facing up to evil in an age of genocide and terror.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.